Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now, welcome to The Art of Potential with your host, Kristen Heemstra, on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to The Art of Potential on 1360 WCHL, where we talk about all things career-related, including getting hired, getting inspired, and getting educated. We are very fortunate today because we have one of the top leadership consultants in the Triangle here with us, and her name is Jane Cox with Eno River Consulting. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, Kristen. Thanks. Great to be here.
We are so glad to have you, and I would just like to share with you the reason that we have Jane here is because she's a genius, and her area of geniusness, if that's a word, is around building organizations. So you build the capacity, you build their effectiveness. What are some of the things you build in an organization?
Hopefully outputs and metrics, whatever is important to organizations, whether it's sales or efficiency or deliverables, as well as people.
And Jane, Jane just didn't happen to start this organization, Eno River Consulting, on her own. She actually has an incredible resume of experience. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your leadership experience?
Sure, absolutely. It started back when I was in camp in eighth grade.
In kindergarten.
When I ran for president of the United States.
Yeah.
Professionally, I think my strongest example of leadership would be being the president and CEO of the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina for 9 years. Yeah. I did that 1997 to 2007 or so. I guess that's 10 years.
And can you tell us a little bit about what happened to the food bank under your leadership?
Sure. The food bank is such an amazing example of so many people from the community, all kinds of communities across 34 counties in central and eastern North Carolina, coming together to feed people in need. So the food bank grew a lot in the time period that I was there because there was an amazing team of staff people and board and amazing people who made all that happen. It grew from being a $1 million operating budget to a $6.5 million operating budget. The food distribution grew from about 6 million pounds to, I think it was 42 million pounds in that same time frame. So there was a lot of service that increased. We also were able to launch additional sites in that 34 county region that really helped to reach some previously hard to reach places. We were really lucky and started a branch in the Greenville area just on the heels of Hurricane Floyd.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually just getting staged and prepped, and then Hurricane Floyd came through, and it was actually the—
And you were full steam ahead.
Yes, it was a North Carolina disaster site for a while.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm going to just take you back to the first part you said, because I completely, completely agree with you. The team of people, you know, you really put them out there as being one of the main reasons that the food bank grew so much. But I have also, just in my work in corporate and educational environments, I just know that the person who's leading defines the culture and defines the success of an organization. And so listening to the results of what, under your leadership, the food bank was able to achieve, I think there's just a lot there to discuss, because whatever you did worked. And I'm not saying, you know, everybody wasn't working around you as much as to say there was some vision or some mission that was clearly communicated. It sounds like all the parts knew how to work together.
Yes, I think I agree with you that a leader's task is to cast vision and create urgency for people to get toward the goal. And in the case of the food bank, it was just really clear. I mean, you know, the food bank distributes food and people need food. The main barrier in North Carolina, which is an agricultural state, in getting more and more food, although the food is donated mostly, was getting enough money to be able to facilitate the transportation and, you know, the distribution of the food. So, in a lot of ways, in those 9 years, my job was a lot of strategy, a lot of visioning, and an awful lot of fundraising.
Well, you took it from, what'd you say, a $1 million budget to a $6-point-something million budget?
Mm-hmm. $6.5 million, that's where I left.
You were quite successful at fundraising, shall we say.
I mean, the exponentially food bank network.
Increased quite a bit. I mean, you know. Okay, so talk to me about the pieces of that experience that you're now working with clients when you work with Eno River. Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing. What I'm really looking for are the core pieces that are needed to have an organization move into a position where they can be as functional as possible.
Right. Well, you know, I think the things that really contributed to the team environment and then engaged people that allowed that kind of performance was really thinking through the end result. Where is it that we really, really want to go?
So end result.
Mm-hmm. Not just the internal team, which was really critical and very, very strong, but which included the staff and board, but also the external team that included foundations, corporations, government agencies, and other folks that were a definite huge part of a very successful team.
So did you sit down and talk to them, do like a meeting with everyone?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All the time. Meetings all the time with everyone. just very helpful to people was designing a white paper that then people would review and be able to react to.
Okay, so what is a white paper?
A white paper, in my opinion, is something that you might create by talking to a handful of key experts, internal and external, about a topic. And so what you'd want, what I want after that is a really solid, good plan. And then with that solid, good plan, the idea is to communicate with a much broader audience of people, of experts that have real talent to contribute. And suddenly the really solid, good plan turns into something a whole lot better.
And bigger.
Absolutely.
So does the white paper include, like what I hear you saying is you with the end result in mind, to me that sounds like a vision. Is that, would you call that like the same thing as an organizational vision or mission, or are those two different?
I think starting with the end in mind is it is a vision, and it's also very concrete in terms of deliverables. Very concrete. Where exactly would you want to end up in a year, in 2 years, in three years?
Okay, so it's got benchmarks in there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes sense.
Because I just think we're all human, and if we don't have them, we'll be measuring up to something else.
Or not measuring at all.
Right.
And actually, that kind of leads to where I want to go and have this conversation kind of move, is applying these same principles to leading yourself. Because I really do think that a lot of these concepts work for external organizations, and there's some element that's valuable to an individual as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, the concept of an end result.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to apply that to an individual, what would that look like?
Would it be like getting a job? That you want?
It could be a career that you want or a lifestyle that you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds to me like you have to name it.
Good point. Yeah, it doesn't start till you name it.
Mm-hmm. So then you put words around what you want. But what I hear you saying is you need benchmarks. So what I want in a year, what I want in 3 years, what I want in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And some kind of accountability from somewhere, whether it's yourself or somebody you love or that loves you. Just
right.
something to keep you on the straight and narrow.
Mm-hmm. But then also, just to kind of take this analogy a little further, it sounds like you have to, you know, if you are involved in a relationship, for example, bring in that other person's input. Or if you have a family, maybe bring in the children's input or your parents' input or kind of things like that.
Mm-hmm. What a good point. Yeah. I think, aren't there a lot of studies about how critical that is for performance success? I think that just the success just increases exponentially when you get people involved like that.
Well, they're invested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're invested because they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have like the end result, sit down, figure out what it is, where it is you're going, 1, 3, 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, I think in that, to me, there's also the leader in that scenario, the leader's performance and that execution, which in an organization, I think, goes to, I don't know if you're familiar, I'm sure you're familiar with 360 evaluations for people where, you know, leaders will take a long assessment about their particular leadership style, and the people that input data are people all on the all that engage with them
perimeter.
Every single day across the entire perimeter. And then that person, it's such a valuable gift to them and really understand how their the nuance of their personality and their interaction with people is affecting the end result. And I think, you know, in thinking about an individual, that that kind of listening for feedback could be really valuable too.
Wow, could it ever? I know I've worked in organizations where the leadership has been, like I said, leaders' styles impact the whole organization. And sometimes you work with leaders who are just kind of there showing up. Sometimes you work with really gung-ho leaders who are over the top. Sometimes you work with people in management who have mental health issues. I mean, there's just, and sometimes you work with incredible leaders that are just very inspirational. So in your opinion, what are some character traits that you've seen modeled in great leaders that show up on the 360s that you're talking about?
You know, one of the biggest, I think, is situational leadership, because it just it is just a truth, I think, of human nature that we all really want to always get it right. And I guess the truth is that life changes so often that right changes just as often as time and circumstances do. So the situational piece is really important to understand. And what kind of situation do you show up in a specific way? And what is the specific impact of that kind of behavior on the team? And so that's the kind of really detailed information that comes in a 360 that can really help adjust people so that they can adjust their sales and just make sure they're hitting the right chord.
We're going to take a quick break. We are talking with Jane Cox, and she, what is your title exactly? Are you CEO or president?
Principal.
Principal of Eno River Consulting. If you want to know more about Eno River, they can find you on the web at
www.enoriverconsulting.org.
And this is Kristen Heemster with Art of Potential. We'll be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra on the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with Jane Cox, principal of Eno River Consulting. Eno River Consulting does leadership and organizational building. And what kind of services do you all do?
It does. It's a really comprehensive firm. We range from servicing 360 instruments for leaders to team assessments, organizational assessments, and support in many different functions and services of organizations. Really, your success is our interest.
Oh, what a great tagline. Your success is our interest. We are talking about leadership. And if you were listening at the beginning, Jane is known throughout the area as being one of the Triangle's great resources on leadership. She did amazing things over at the food bank. And one of the things we were just talking about is bringing a vision and bringing accountability, basically, into the environment you're working in. And one question I have is about the accountability piece. What are some good ways to hold people accountable or hold yourself accountable as you move through this leadership phase?
What are your favorite ways to be held accountable?
That's not fair. I asked you the question.
But I've seen your board about the various pieces of your life with a great, it's a great visual. It's a very powerful visual of, you know, of whatever it is that you're measuring with personal pictures involved that are just helpful in targeting because you're a visual person.
I am a visual person. And what Jane is referring to is in doing this work on my own and kind of figuring out where I wanted my experience to go, I need pictures because I need to have something to look at to know what it looks like, because otherwise I just will come up with something on my own that usually isn't nearly as good as what the picture is showing. So I did things along those lines where I didn't, and one thing you brought up, which I think is good, I didn't necessarily benchmark that well. And I don't know that the accountability piece was that painful. I think sometimes when it's painful, like I know with my children, I'll make not doing something incredibly painful, like you don't get the sleepover if your room's not clean. And I just think on an organizational level that
pain.
Yes. I mean, so, and on a personal level. So I am actually kind of throwing that out there, fishing for ideas.
Yes. You know, I don't mean to be a one record person. I'm just thinking about that being fairly situational, too, because we're all so different.
Yeah.
For me, I have for example, I have such a high idea productivity that's actually I don't remember the ideas very well. I'm an extrovert. Mm-hmm. So what I need for accountability is another human being who is detailed enough to remember what I said. And so but I don't think everybody needs that. And I think, you know, some people are very visual. I'm certainly also very visual. That helps me so much. But different people are really different, you know, like even in space and the way things are compartmentalized on their desk.
Yep.
It's just, you know, I think it is whatever really truly motivates you. For me, I think it always is another person.
Yeah, and to the motivation point, I have heard of people doing accountability. If I do this, then I will get a massage, or if I do this, then I will get. And so it's a reward-based thing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what you're talking about is if I interact and produce what I set my goal to do, then the result will be this. So it's not necessarily pain-induced.
Right. And I think for me, I think for people, it has a lot to do with authenticity and mm-hmm. getting what they really want. So I think if you really, really want something truly, deeply, that'll be a lot easier to track and measure mm-hmm. than something else that mm-hmm. maybe you're just not as excited about.
Yeah.
And I just think about being in college and doing a paper about something. I thought it was a pretty good topic, whatever it was, but I was really, really, really not interested in it. And it was like pulling teeth to write that paper. And then I had a friend make a suggestion about a topic that I found fascinating and endlessly entertaining. And that paper kind of wrote itself.
Yeah.
So I think there's really a trick to a person's truth and what is important to them and how they want to present it to the world. Do you think that's?
Oh, I think that is just brilliant wisdom right there. I think it also requires a lot of self-reflection and, to your point, taking some steps that you don't like to figure out what it is that you do.
mm-hmm.
You know, and I see that a lot with young people who they say, oh, I have so many folks right now who want to be doctors. Everyone wants to be a doctor. But then when you get into the hard sciences and when you see what it is, you find that, you know, in the end, they really want to be novelists or, you know, something very creative or, you know, in a different venue. But
really trying all that on just so you know what it is.
So you know what it is. And, you know, you said the topic sounded really interesting. Well, a lot of times things sound really interesting and then they're not and things of that nature. So the self-reflective piece, I think, is essential, not just for the interest, but also for leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Your 360 sounds like it forces self-reflection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It does. It's sort of a snapshot at a given time of how your leadership is impacting other people. I'm amazed by all the nuances in that instrument and just by the many different ways it could say, you are a little too flexible or you are a little too controlling. You
mm-hmm.
know? Or maybe you're both in various aspects of your life. It's just very helpful, I think.
Yeah, I think we would all test a little bit too on some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Really a great thing.
So they get the results and then they have to apply them.
Mm-hmm.
Are there tips that they're given or are they coached through the ability? Like, let's say that it came back that you were way too controlling and your staff wasn't buying into whatever it was you were doing because they felt like they didn't have any control. Then is there a coaching piece that takes place where you give them strategies not to be controlling anymore?
Absolutely. Or not to be perceived as controlling anymore.
yeah. Because as a leader, you have to have some desire to control the outcome of a situation.
We just are all who we are.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the data on that says that you can really do almost, you can be whomever you need to be if you have in the end result the whole gestalt of what's going on in mind.
Okay.
If your greater good, if your benchmark is the greater good and you're going after something because it's for the greater good, the chances of success are so much greater.
Really?
Than if it's anything else. And I mean, and
that's
people can
value
really,
driven then.
Mm-hmm. And people can tell. I mean, people can tell if that's people because we're a little like dogs. We really can tell, like, is that on or is that off?
Mm-hmm. Do you really love me or are you just pretending?
We're just like that. We know. Yeah.
It sounds like a mission. Like I'm feeling a mission statement kind of in there mm-hmm. of our mission is to mm-hmm. do this. So I will put up with whatever mm-hmm. oddities you bring to the table because we both have committed to this greater mm-hmm. mission.
Mm-hmm. 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 I think that basis is a really great way to control for silos, to control for...
And silos are people who are out on their own?
Mm-hmm. People or departments or groups that are separated just because of communication patterns that are stuck or information flows, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so keep going. You were saying communicating, that piece is very important for the bridge of, over silos or controlling for silos.
Yeah, I do. I think that that's really important because it kind of keeps everybody's, you know, I think that the emotional intelligence of the leader to some extent drives the emotional intelligence of the team.
Oh.
Just in that, not in that the emotional intelligence in the leader is everything, but the emotional intelligence of the leader, I think, enables, empowers the leadership, the emotional intelligence of the whole team. When the leader is not emotionally intelligent, I think the rest of the team can perceive that and performance is not what it could be.
Well, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very valuable point. And we are going to take another quick break. And then I want to talk a little bit more about emotional intelligence and leadership because this is a fascinating topic. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra. This is the Art of Potential show on 1360 WCHL. We will be returning in a moment with our interview with Jane Cox, principal of Eno River Consulting.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to The Art of Potential. I am talking with Jane Cox. She is the principal of Eno River Consulting, which is a firm that deals with helping organizations. And you have to say it again, because it's what do you do exactly?
Helping organizations develop capacity, and particularly working with organizations and individuals in times of change.
Okay, I want to talk about capacity. Just what is it? I hear that word thrown around so much. So I'd like to know, what is an organizational capacity? What is?
I think it is the ability of the organization to get done whatever it wants to do. And I don't know, kind of relating that to our conversation earlier, you know, John Maxwell has a lot to say about the leadership lid and how, you know, the leadership lid of various individuals is really important because it controls the level of communication and output that can actually happen. And so I think that that's really true in organizations too. The leadership lid of the CEO and the collective leadership lid of the entire organization really does, in my opinion, control the success of the outcome in many cases.
Okay, so when I think of leadership lid, I just have to tell you, I'm literally thinking of a lid.
Like, well, I think it's true. It's like a lid. Yeah.
Okay, so do you stop then if you reach your top?
Well, it's because it's a leadership lid because if it is, because it does stop, because it stops. So if it's a lid and if the lid is down low, then it's almost, you know, the pressure is, keeps it down. And, and you know, the thing is, I think, one of the things I really truly believe in organizations, and I don't mean this irreverently, but I mean it authentically, you know, there are just a lot of people that are smarter than you.
Right.
No matter who you are, no matter where you are, because, you know, intelligence is such a multifaceted phenomenon. Yep. It just is true. And I think organizations are so much better when they understand and recognize that and use that as an advantage in their strategy.
Absolutely. And Ryan Alice from Eye Contact was one of the first people that really talked about that on the show and how important it was to hire people smarter than you are and stay out of their way.
He's so smart.
You know, that was his thing. So let's talk about these intelligences because the emotional intelligence is, you know, made a big impact on the business community and it is so valuable. Mm-hmm. How would you describe emotional intelligence?
I think it is really looking at another person, understanding them, understanding where they're coming from. It might in some ways be compassion based. Emotional intelligence. How it's funny. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and it's very interesting to watch them start to see the world around them and to think with actually sometimes some real sensitivity about what's happening and how it's happening. And I think it's just, you know, taking a moment to do that, just like children do in many cases, and think through how would somebody be feeling about
right now.
Something right now.
And I would just like to piggyback on that because it's not just how are they feeling, but what I see in really great people who have really high levels of emotional intelligence is they internalize that, and then their output is, how would I like to be approached?
Mm-hmm.
So there's another component to it. It's like step one, your dog just died. I bet you're really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another thing. Well, how would I like someone to approach me if, you know, that situation happened?
Mm-hmm.
And it also, the other thing that I noticed that it does in terms of developing compassion is it also minimizes pity, which is kind of an interesting thing.
Mm. Tell me more about that. How does it minimize pity?
People don't like to be pitied.
At all.
They don't. So
we don't. No one does.
Mm-hmm. You like to be comforted.
Mm-hmm.
So your dog dies. Oh, I'm so sorry. But it's a very different reaction because a pity, not that we all don't throw pity parties. I mean, I've been known to do that. But the point is you have a power differential mm-hmm. when you're looking at a situation involving a pity situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if I pity your condition, if mm-hmm. I pity where you've had to come from, if I pity
what your circumstances are.
Your circumstances mm-hmm. are or whatever, then immediately you see a difference in the amount of perceived power within the structure of the relationship.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. It's interesting. One of our clients now is an anti-poverty program called Circles, North Carolina yeah. Circles. It works to get people out of poverty. And in early trials, it got one out of every two people out of poverty
wow.
that it worked with in Iowa. So I think there are just a lot of really great things about that for some communities to try on and try out. And it's interesting because that dynamic is very present in the philosophy of that model, which is that poverty is not just an individual condition, but indeed it's a societal condition. And the poverty in relationships that we have collectively is a really important thing to think about. So it sort of shifts
wow.
that power differential to understand that we're all poor in some ways.
Okay, I need you to explain the poverty in relationships a little bit more.
Oh, okay. Because just as you were talking,
right.
I was thinking a lot about different groups that people might pity, you know? And I think particularly that...
I was thinking of individual relationships, actually.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm so sorry that X and Y happened to you.
Right.
And that, yes. Uh-huh. And so I was thinking sort of at a macro level,
mm-hmm.
you know, who is among the most pitied? And I was thinking, well, you know, poverty sure is a problem. And
yeah.
isn't there a collective pity of the poor? And is that anything that will help is sort of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It, you know, to the point that you were having. And it just is an amazing thing, I think, because this program has kind of turned that idea on its head and said...
How has it done that?
And sort of said, well, you know, the truth is we're all poor and that we're rich only in relationship to one another. So, you know, although someone may be materially poor, they can lead a process to get themselves out of poverty while working with other people in other classes and just get themselves on out. There is an equal or greater need of people in the other parts of the community to interact in relationship with the poor. And I think that that's true, not just in that dynamic that I mentioned, but in multiple other axes of other
oh, yeah.
kinds of relationships that we just don't see. And I think the richness in relationship and imbalance comes when you see the other side of exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, how in one way or another we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just because of the way my mind works, I'm thinking, why aren't we saying we're all rich in so many ways?
Yeah.
And make the connection that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Well, it just seems to me that if you're approaching things from a position of having abundance and having prosperity in your relationships or, you know, in some aspect of your life, it would make you just a little bit more affable and joyful and wanting people to be around you more than if you were mm-hmm. trying to connect on a position of everybody lacks in some way.
Yes, it's true. I do think, though, I agree with that completely. And also in the other part of my brain, I'm thinking, you know, when honestly there yeah. is not enough money to
right.
pay for light.
That's true.
That there is some sort of falseness about talking about richness. Not richness
yeah.
in multiple parts of life, but not acknowledging the truth of that moment.
Yeah. Because then you're inauthentic. You've moved to a state of inauthenticity if you're trying to talk about being rich when you can't pay for anything. And I appreciate the fake it till you make it, but on the other hand, anyway.
It's interesting, but I love the abundance. I mean, it is. We're so lucky to be here in this time. There's so much good for so many people. You know, you talked about, you mentioned Ryan Alice. I happen to be on Facebook. I think he's so fabulous. And he had this wonderful video, which was about, you know, life is great and everybody doesn't think so. Like, you know, we have washing machines and telephones and computers and people can be somewhere at the speed of light and somehow, you know, things still get them down.
Right, yeah. No, it's true. And you don't, and that's part of the thing. You don't appreciate something till it's gone. You don't appreciate your car really until you don't have it.
Yes. Yes, it's true. Yeah. Till you can't move and then you're really bummed. Yes.
Well, we are going to take a final break here. And when we get back, we're going to be wrapping up here with Jane Cox and talking about leadership, both on an organizational and a personal level. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra. This is the Art of Potential Show on 1360 WCHL.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to the Art of Potential show. I am talking to the principal of Eno River Consulting, Jane Cox, about the concepts of leadership, both on an organizational and a personal level. And what I would like to throw out, Jane, is you have seen so many leaders at this point in your career, and I'd like to, do you have any observations about what great leadership looks like?
I was just thinking for a moment that great leadership is really so relational.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the old adage, may not remember someone's name, but you'll always remember how they made you feel, is really true. So inspiration and motivation and the capacity to genuinely connect with people is just so important, I think, in leadership. And the other pieces we're talking about, the strategy, the mission, the, you know, benchmarks, all those are critical too because they're a little like tomato stakes in the ground that the vines can grow up and be beautiful with. But there is in leadership, I think, an entire process component. And a very large part of being a leader is clearing enough of that work, the systemic, logical tomato stakes of the work, to make sure that that part's there so that the relational pieces can be there in the organization. Because I, you know, people that are all rowing in the same boat at the same time as quickly and as hard as they can really do go faster than anything else.
That's true. And we know from research, fascinating research actually, that trust. So if you have, what I hear you saying is you need to have an authentic relationship with the people around you, which means, translates into my mind as a trusting relationship. Because when two people authentically show up to a place and are open to each other and open to having a dialogue, you develop trust because you don't feel like someone has an ulterior motive or a different agenda or is going to come back and throw something in your face later. You know, you're kind of there. And we know that information then travels better when there's trust. So if one person hears something and they are in a trusting relationship with another, you see the information flow. They've actually grafted. It's pretty interesting to see the gateways of information and who the information keepers are in an organization, because it's not always who you think it is.
Right, right, right. It's those other people.
Right. It's the other people who manage to make things go. But to your point about leadership, the importance of having that trust, because then you too, you don't even necessarily need a 360, because somebody who works with you trusts you enough to come back and deliver information that you may not want to hear.
Right, right, right.
But they trust you and respect you enough to want you to hear it.
Right. Yes. That's one really powerful, important outcome. But then the thing is that each person's perception is so incredibly valid. And while one person will react just in the way that you said, there, you know, out of a team of, you know, 20, there may be 18 that don't. So, you know, so it, you can build a culture that that is an important piece of it. But even if it is, even if there are only seven that don't, there are still those seven who have really important pieces on the team that need a different way to express their opinions sometimes.
So how would you help them, or how would you help the leader to give them an expression?
You know, there are, I think that empowerment is one of the great misunderstood concepts today. And I think, you know, in terms of empowerment, when you're a leader, I think there is a clear but fairly nuanced goal of casting a vision and being clear about what the outcomes are and what the ultimate deliverables are, and at the same time enabling a real conversation and a real dreaming or processing, or, you know, really empowering other people to think hard about how we're going to get there and what's going to happen. And what I find in my work over and over and over again is that some people are so great at that. They can let go and they can be clear, be focused, set a specific picture and let go, and manage to objective. But over and over and over again, it's very, very hard for people to let go. And I think it really goes to, you know, people have been so successful in school or in individual performance, and it just seems like if you don't do it, it really isn't going to happen well.
Right, yeah.
And the truth is, it probably really won't all the time, and it's just a whole different thing to manage, you know?
It is. Like, you're talking to me, and I'm thinking, oh, yes, I don't know that I can let go. Like, I have a real hard time letting go.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Delegating is just not, yeah.
So inspiring, you are.
Yeah, right. I can't let go of anything, though. And what I hear you saying is, to be a great leader, you set a beautiful vision, you let everyone contribute to it, and then you let it go because you know and trust that it will be done. Yeah, I'm not there.
I mean, there really is something deciding what to keep and deciding what to let go.
Yeah.
It's not always like a boat sets sail and then everything works out, but it's more like there are, you know, there are some clear stakes in the ground about where things are going to go, and then there are some clear benchmarks and stakes along the way, so everyone feels comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. There are, and in my defense, I think part of it is, now that I've thrown myself under the bus, no, but I think part of it is you are able to let go when you see the people around you pick up and deliver something that is sensational, that is way better than you ever could have conceived of or delivered on your own.
Right.
And then the letting go is more of a push off. Like, what else can you take?
Right. Right. I mean, I guess, you know, thinking about leadership, it's so different when you are an individual contributor versus a team manager. You know, when you're an individual contributor, things like that, the thing that you're mentioning, show up sometimes more. You understand sort of how much you are feel better doing the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, in that environment, you have to. And if you don't, you know, there's really nothing else that will happen. You know, in a team, that's why I'm such a big fan of teams and true collaborations and teams.
Okay, so why do you say true? Like, you had to specify that. Why?
Well, I think it is such a happy, positive, could be perceived as a very fluffy thing to say, that teams work, in my opinion, better than individual performance. It's not really just my opinion. It's actually the research. It's really, you
but
know.
It's good to claim it as your own.
Right. But I thought that, too.
Right.
And I mean, it has to be a really true, high-functioning team. It can't be a, you know, if you are a part of camp counselors, it can't always be an everything goes kind of thing.
Nope.
That leads to the best results. Often systems and structures and outputs and outcomes, you know, as a really solid structure, help to give the entire experience its teeth and its roots and lead to a very successful outcome for everybody. So there really is a lot of process and task work and a lot of self-reflection and growth as teams and individuals interact together for true performance. And it's so, you know, I think that my advice to folks is to do the true collaborative approach only when something's really, really, really important. Because if it is that important, then it really does need sort of a broad
input from everybody.
Mm-hmm. And otherwise, sometimes there just isn't, in my experience with teams, time to go through that kind of thing. So really setting up the benchmarks and the expectations about what sorts of pieces will move through quickly through individuals or teams or in what different environments and which pieces are managed more collaboratively is a really important part. And that's just an endlessly fascinating topic to me. I think that, you know, I could talk about it for 82 hours right. if you wanted to. Is it interesting?
Maybe not to everybody, but I mean, it is an interesting, it's very, from a management perspective, it's incredibly interesting. And I think every person has elements of what you're talking about in their daily, you know, life in mm-hmm. professional work and actually in your personal work too. Because what flashed to me was marriage. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's incredibly important and it better mm-hmm. be a collaborative effort because if it's not, there's, you know, you don't have investment on both sides, you're not going to have the outcome there, the end result that you want, mm-hmm. per se. So, so I that's just kind of the way that I think about, though, that kind of a concept. And what mm-hmm. I hear you saying is if it's that important, everybody is on board and mm-hmm. moving in that direction.
Because it takes, I think, that really good teams take a good chunk of startup, kind of startup.
To start up well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then if you actually are able to take that time and create an environment where you can do that probably quicker than, in training and things like that, then the results really start to happen so much faster.
I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can even though it's painful, my guess is at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I can completely see that. Mm-hmm. Well, Jane, thank you very much for joining us today on the Art of Potential show. And if people want to reach you, they go to
www.enoriverconsulting.com. CONSULTING.org.
Thank you for listening to Art of Potential. You can follow us on Twitter at Art of Potential, and you can also check out our website, artofpotential.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.